Right now, we're going to get underway with our broadcast partners.
This first broadcast partner comes out of the Washington, D.C. area. Colonel Bob McGinnis was talking yesterday on a nationwide radio broadcast, being interviewed by another man and a subject on the Middle East, of course, and prophecy. And in the course of the conversation, we open up the phone lines and some lady called in and said, hey, and she knew of our broadcast. She said, I heard Bob McGinnis and saw him on Russian television. So before we went on the air, I just asked, Bob, man, are you traveling all over the world? Of course, through electronics, they can get you. Were you in Washington when you were on Russian television, Bob?
Yes, they have a nice studio here in town, Jimmy.
Well, that is neat. And what a unique opportunity Bob has of addressing geopolitical activities across the world with many media outlets. We're thrilled that he spends some time with us. Bob, let's talk about what's been going on in Iran this last week, about 3 days of exercises. It was entitled Great Prophet, the Iranians testing their ballistic missiles and putting up mock U.S. Air Force or Army or Navy bases there in the Middle East, and then putting up a replica of the State of Israel and test firing these ballistic missiles without warheads. They said they could put warheads on them if they have to go to war, but testing to see if they would be able to reach these U.S. bases and also the State of Israel. And then they make the statement that indeed if they come under attack, within minutes they could wipe out their attacking enemy, i.e. the U.S. bases and the State of Israel. What do you know about this, Bob?
Well, typically they have what they call the Great Prophet series of exercises, and we've heard about them for many years now. And this is always a time for the Iranian military to boast about their capabilities. And of course, one of their generals decided he was going to send out a verbal threat that 35 U.S. bases in the Middle East are being targeted, which, you know, they know where our forward operating bases are, airfields in Kuwait and Bahrain and, you know, facilities in Afghanistan. So that's nothing unusual. I would be suspect, though, because even the Shabab 3 and some of the other ballistic missiles are not incredibly accurate. Now, if it's a big enough facility and they do happen to shoot one there, it's probably going to get somewhere inside of the fence. But their accuracy is certainly not what ours is. But the threat is something we need to take seriously.
Yeah, indeed. But are they, Bob, just pounding their chests? Is this somewhat braggadocia? Are they really serious about wanting to be prepared?
No, I think they have to be prepared. They see a very serious threat around them. You know, we've built up our footprint in that part of the world with a number of carriers in the region, more aircraft, and of course we have a significant presence in Kuwait and the Fifth Fleet operating out of Bahrain. We have other facilities on the other side in Afghanistan. They're very cognizant of that, and they have to, they feel compelled to respond. Now, of course, they also have Islamic Revolutionary Guards men that are all over the world. We saw this week a couple of them arrested in Kenya, and they're fighting this, you know, shadow war with us. You know, we've obviously acknowledged some complicity with regards to the cyber war, but there are other aspects of it, and it will continue for some time.
And you mentioned that we have some aircraft carriers there in that region of the world. I've been noticing it seems that the United States is flexing their muscle there in the Persian Gulf, and that would probably be because of the Strait of Hormuz and the sea lane that needs to be opened for the exit of some of these great oil carriers, these big ships carrying just millions of gallons of oil out of the area. Would that probably be the case and why we're flexing our muscles?
Well, yes. And of course, on the 1st of July, the European Union started its sanctions on oil, which, you know, really, and we're going along with it, trying to enforce it. That's why the Kenyans this week backed out of an oil agreement. And, you know, the South Koreans have backed out of somewhat of an oil agreement with Iran. And the oil is, of course, being forced to be, for the most part, reflagged with a variety of vessels that are trying to hide the identity. Of course, we know exactly what vessels are going into ports in Iran. The oil flowing by train and by truck out the north of Iran through Azerbaijan into Russia, into China, you know, they can only deliver so much. It's the big vessels that carry millions of gallons of petroleum that they'd like to be able to use, but we put the pressure on them and they're not able to do that as much. So they're reacting, they're talking about, you know, closing the straits, they're being rather brash in their statements, but, you know, that's Iran. We've seen it for many, many decades.
Well, let's stay in the region, a bit different focus, just a little bit at least, some connection to the Iranian development of a nuclear weapon of mass destruction. It looks like Saudi Arabia is getting ready to work a deal with China to get some ballistic missiles. And conversation going on, I understand a deal has already been struck with Pakistan to get some weapons of mass destruction available to put on those missiles as warheads. What's the latest on?
Well, Jimmy, I've speculated on this program over the years about a cozy relationship with Riyadh and Islamabad, and the fact that the Crown Prince has gone to Islamabad with big plane loads of money in the past, and there's not a Pakistani politician that can't be bought off. So, you know, you've got enough money and you'll transfer it to a Swiss bank account and you'll get what you want. And keep in mind, the Pakistanis have enough coal to, you know, fuel that country for the next 500 years, but they're rapidly building nuclear reactors and cold water reactors for plutonium. You know, the only other reason you would want to do that is in order to make nuclear weapons from what you pull off the cold water reactor, the plutonium. And then, of course, to hide their program. They probably have verging on a couple hundred, and they probably want to increase those numbers. That's to counter the Iranians, but when you have a couple extra, it's worth a few billion dollars to the Saudis so that you can transfer that. Now, back in the 80s, the Chinese already sold Saudis some ballistic missiles, what was called the DF-3As, their intermediate range ballistic missile. They have, you know, about 100 miles south, a little over that, of Riyadh, a number of facilities you can see on Google Earth. They're missile facilities, and they've been well publicized, or at least, you know, they're out there. And they probably have somewhere in the order of maybe 30 to 100 ballistic missiles that are certainly capable of ranging the entire Middle East. Can they be mated with a Pakistani nuclear weapon? Well, you know, the PAKs got their ballistic missiles from the Chinese, and so it's probably not totally out of the question that they could figure out how to mate it with the help of the Pakistanis and the Chinese. So I'm not surprised by, you know, what's being speculated, but, you know, with certitude, I don't know that we're prepared to say that.
Bob, when we were talking about you doing these television programs, news reports for Russian television, before we went on the air, you were talking about doing the focus on Iraq. Now, there was an interesting story coming out of Jerusalem, one of the newspapers there, talking about how oil and politics was actually hindering the rebuilding of the ancient city of Babylon. The Iraqi tourism ministry wanting to make that one of the great tourist sites in all the world and help in the production and activities of rebuilding their war-torn country. But it looks like the oil minister there wants to get the oil out of the ground, and so there's going to be a battle. What's going on in that situation?
Now, keep in mind, oil does fuel that economy. Better than 90% of their exports are in the terms of oil. And, you know, they haven't even sorted out how they're going to redistribute that oil wealth, and they've been battling it long after Saddam Hussein was put to death up to the present. Hilla, which is the small town that is right to the north of, you know, the ancient Babylon, you know, isn't much of a town, but the facility, the ruins there would take a lot of effort. Now, if the oil minister has found oil underneath there, which is not a surprise, because when you fly over that region, as I have a couple of times, you see them flaring off the natural gas, you see the oil pumps and so forth. And oil, you know, Iraq is perhaps has the second, if not the first, largest reservoir of untapped oil in the world. So they have a natural resource that the world wants, and they can enrich themselves with it. And I don't think that even resurrecting ancient Babylon from its ruins is going to be sufficiently beneficial to the Iraqi people, financially at least, to trump the oil exploration.
Well, that battle is going to continue to take place there in Iraq as they try to rebuild their war-torn country. Significant is Babylon, the city itself, it plays into end-time prophecy. We'll talk more about that when we take a look at the book later on this broadcast. Colonel Bob McGinnis from Washington, D.C., helping us to understand geopolitical activities across the world. Bob, thank you so very much, my friend.
Thank you, Jimmy.